This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Bunker Books podcast. My name is Nick Cohen, and today we are talking about 26.2 Miles to Happiness, a comedian's tale of running, red wine, and redemption by Paul Tonkinson, which is the best book about running I think I've ever read. It's just a tremendous exploration of why people run, and being by a comedian, it's also quite funny, but it is not just funny by any means. I'm delighted to have Paul Tonkinson with me. Hello, Paul.
Good morning. That's very kind of you to say so, you know. And also, it's nice because, you know, when you're writing these things, you hope that some people will see that you put some effort into the writing and some thought into it as well. People who, I don't know, you were the first person with some sort of cultural currency to say that they liked it. So it's good. I kind of got the book through on a bit of a kind of, you know, the pitch was it's about running, but there'll be a little bit of showbiz chat and stuff. That was a bit of a Trojan horse. I didn't present it as a sort of psychodrama that it became.
Yeah.
Because the book kind of changed in the writing of it. So I put a lot of effort into the book and I really enjoyed writing.
Oh, you could see that. I mean, most books about running are across the Ethiopian highlands or running the Andes barefoot.
Yes.
But yeah. This is very much about the overwhelming majority of people, I think, who take it up and who fall in love with it. A very good piece of advice I've always taken about writing is do it chronologically. So let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
And the reader gets a bit of a taste of what is to come because you're at a party in Crouch End and a friend of yours says, people only run to run. But before we go any further, I should say that we are living up to every Ramona cliche here. I'm broadcasting from a studio in Islington, talking about a drinks party in Crouch End. Before we go any further, I think I'd just like to say I'm from Manchester and I think you're from Scarborough, Paul, is that right?
I'm from Scarborough, yes.
So just in case people think we're a pair of dainty, pointy-nosed elite ponces.
Yeah. We should be proud.
We ought to emphasise our northern cred here, but the fact remains, yeah, you're at a party in Crouch End, I'm in the studio in Islington, and a friend of yours says to you, people only run because they're running away from something.
Yes, that's my friend Richard. I remember it very vividly. He was saying, it was quite a reductive argument, but it's an argument that a lot of people come out with, that a lot of people are running away from some kind of pain or trauma. And initially, I sort of thrust against that argument quite powerfully. But I think the book delves into that and develops it. And I think there's obviously elements of truth within that. You're running simultaneously away from it and towards it as well, in a way, because when you...
Yes, well, certainly. And you set yourself the ambition of running a marathon in under 3 hours.
Yes.
Which is very, very fast in my book.
It's all relative, isn't it? I think a sub-3-hour marathon is a good sort of club runner's time. I know a lot of people have run faster than that, but it's a definite mark that you can take pride in. It's a number that you can say and people stand back in shock and go, wow, you know, it's one of those.
Well, it is. I'm one of them. How fast is that per kilometre?
I tend to deal in miles, but it's...
Okay.
But no, fine. It's about 6.52 per mile and about 4.15, 4.16 per kilometre, I think.
Which is faster than I've ever run, full stop.
It's pretty fast, but I think... I mean, I mention it in the book, and it's not just lip service. I think any marathon is incredible. And I think for some people, a four-hour marathon is just as difficult. In many ways, I think it's harder to run a slower marathon because you're out there for longer.
Yeah, I know. It takes so long.
You know what I mean? And you're not you're not as fit to start with. Do you know what I mean? There's something
okay. You've set yourself this target.
Yeah.
Why do you do it?
I think looking back, it was a symbol of achievement that I wanted to reach. I'd returned to running. I used to do a lot of running in my teens, and then I got back into it into my late 30s and into my 40s. And I could feel it constantly calling for me. It's something I'd wanted to do. I'd always assumed I'd just do it, really, when I was a runner, when I was a kid up north, and everyone was running sub threes. It just started to crystallise. I started to run marathons again. I did a 3:30 off not that much training, and then I did a 3:09 marathon. I just got more and more into being extremely fit, and the three-hour marathon became a symbol of that, and I was surrounded by people training to do that. So it seemed a natural target. Yeah, and I just kind of sank into it. The more you propel yourself into these things, then the more momentum you develop, and it just kind of takes over, really.
Now, technically, the book is very cleverly written, I think, in that you have every mile of the race, every 26.2 miles.
Yes.
You have a description of every mile, and that's interwoven with the story of your life. It's such a surprising book, because you start off, and it's very, very funny describing being... You're actually, when you run the London Marathon, you're one of the elite, aren't you, Paul? You're one of the showbiz stars who goes into a special VIP enclosure.
Yeah, I entered the hallowed environment of the celebrity tent. I witness James Cracknell Vaselining his testicles.
A scene no reader can ever forget.
These are heady times. Yes, yeah. The book starts with that description of the absurdities of it and how nervous everyone is in the celebrity tent, and Chris Evans striding around like some kind of Nordic god and just ex-footballers, etc. And it's good fun, but they're no different to the rest of us. Of course, they've just got unlimited coffee and croissants on hand should they need to do it, and access to a toilet a lot quicker, which is no small thing when you're about to do a marathon. But I wanted the first chapter, and this sounds extremely pretentious.
In the right place.
I wanted the first chapter to mirror the opening chapter to Don DeLillo's Underworld, where he describes a baseball match. Just the variety of people amassing for the baseball game, and this sort of like force binding them and bringing them all together, but then the momentum and carnival aspects of that, and sometimes grotesque. And of course, I didn't get anything like that, because he's a genius. But that was the kind of thing I wanted the first chapter of the book to be, and then it ends with the beginning of the marathon, just that, to propel us into it.
As the book goes on, Paul, you realise there's something else going on here. As you go on, you start to read about your childhood,
yes,
about your stepmother, your friend at the party who said people who run are running away from demons. Could there be some truth in that in your case?
Oh, yeah, I think so, yeah. I absolutely think so. And I didn't really plan that. As I say, it came out, I wanted to naturally chronicle what it is to try and run a fast marathon. And part of what running a fast marathon is trying to approach the wall. So I talk about the wall a lot, which is the period of the marathon where, as I'm sure you're aware, when you've run it yourself, everything gets incredibly tiring, almost existentially tiring, just sort of bone tired, a sort of fatigue beyond fatigue. And what it was to attack that stage of the race in order to get through it quicker than I normally do, because in most marathons previous to my attempt to beat 3 hours, I'd always kind of surrendered to it, which and there's a pleasure in that. There's a pleasure in just saying, oh, who cares, and surrender to it. But I just wanted to wrestle with it a bit more and work out what that feeling was. And to get through that quickly involved accessing a bit of sort of positive anger, I suppose, which a lot of athletes, when I've chatted to athletes at fairly high level, a lot of them use. And that involved dealing with elements of my past that I hadn't dealt with as completely as I could have done. I wanted to deal with these things quite sensitively, because people are alive. And
of course,
There's various legal things. You know, it's almost like you should have seen what I wanted to write. But at the same time, I didn't want it to be a misery memoir or anything like that.
No, it's not. But your stepmother, when your father remarries,
yes,
she virtually, she makes you eat your meals in the garden. You like running, so she stops you running. It's almost like a grim fairy tale.
Yeah, it sort of is that. It's that phrase that I constantly tell my kids, isn't it? You know, hurt people hurt people, you know, and she's coming from a bit of a dysfunctional place herself, but she was undoubtedly not ready to deal with kids. We had a lot of problems. She was psychologically and physically violent, and that lasted for quite a long time. And anything I enjoyed, she didn't want me to enjoy. So she took away my running trainers. I used to get up at 5 a.m. before anyone get up and get some army boots out of the cupboard and run down to the beach and then come home and pretend I hadn't got out, you know, creep back into my house and pretend I hadn't gone to bed yet. I mean, it sounds unreal now, you know, but it's like, it's what I did, you know, and those moments do define you. And they're both simultaneously awful and fantastic, really, in retrospect. It's awful that I had to do it, but fantastic that I did. Part of the motivation for wanting to talk about things like that was to honestly connect with other people going through similar experiences, you know, and give them a bit of hope. And and also, I'm really mindful of the fact that everyone has things like this. Mine just happened to come in the figure of my stepmom, who's obviously flawed, as we all are. But no one emerges with a free pass. Do you know what I mean? Everyone I know has had something in their life that forces them to reassess what life is about and to rebuild themselves and come again.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Look, Paul, I'm nothing like the runner you are. I spend most of my time either injured or recovering from injury or fine and about to be injured. But what I thought was so beautiful about your book and what I think would appeal to everyone who just, you know, does a park run, all hundreds of thousands who do a park run at the weekend and everybody, is there are wonderful passages where you talk about the bullshit that people get at work, that they get on social media, that they get everywhere, about people constantly having to present themselves through Instagram pictures and put on the face, and about how running, unlike pretty much any other sport I can think of, perhaps swimming and cycling are the same, but there's such an honesty to running in that you get out what you put in.
Yeah.
You can't fake it.
Yeah. It's totally that sort of simplicity of it, isn't it? It's that sort of the correlation between effort and reward is so obvious and basic and different to normal life, isn't it? Like, as we say, like, I work in an industry where you're often valued on your engagement with social media, how many followers you might have on Twitter or whatever. And yet we know these forums, however wonderful in some aspects, because I think there's really positive aspects to them, they're not particularly good for our mental health, you know, either personally or globally. And yet we're judged by those metrics. It's a little bit absurd, really. And obviously for me generationally, it looks increasingly absurd. You know, I just can't be bothered to engage in these things. But running sort of transcends that, doesn't it? It's simple. You run a lot of miles, you'll get stronger. You run fast, you'll get better at running fast. There's something very simple about that, and everyone can engage with it on their own level. You know, the couch to 5K, you know, and then people can go from 5K and suddenly they're running 6 miles.
Oh, it is the most. I mean, I did couch to 5K about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And at the start, I couldn't run for 5 minutes.
Yes.
And I thought, this is insane, you stupid man. Why are you doing this? Actually, that was my wife saying that.
Yes.
And after 2 months, I could run for half an hour.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Quite easy. It is the most extraordinary change. Well, also, if you are like me, an office worker, as an awful lot of people are, you've got your commute into work and then you go to pubs or restaurants or whatever at the weekends. I found, having lived in my part of London for, 30 years or so, when I started running, I got to know my area for the first time, because you're doing different routes, you're going down different streets, you're finding parks. It grounds you into your locality.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
It's quite interesting during the pandemic, because I had arguments, but sort of debates with conservative journalists who were very, very impressed by Sweden, which had far fewer restrictions than us.
Yes.
But COVID was not at the same level. It was still far higher than neighbouring Nordic countries. Mm. But, you know, they had a point.
Yeah.
Until I started talking to doctors who said, and this is something, you know, everyone talks about the crisis we have to face with global warming and the rise of China and plastic and whatever. But in Britain, the obesity crisis meant that our death rate was far, far higher than, say, Nordic countries. Because in Scandinavia, people do. You don't have to run. You can walk. You can cycle. Yeah. As a matter of course, they stay. Most people, or large numbers of people, just do it as a matter of course. It means when the pandemic came along, which can hit people in different ways. But certainly, if you were heavily overweight, your odds of being seriously ill or dying shot up.
And you saw people sort of almost physically try to outrun the pandemic, didn't you? You saw a fair few people were overweight going for runs, and good luck to them, and fantastic. You know, you sort of, it's a very simple thing to do, isn't it? To just get fitter to help the NHS as opposed to all the other measures we could do as well. But it's not to be discounted, is it? You know,
no, but I mean, culturally, it's very odd in Britain at the moment.
Yes.
Because if you start saying we've got to do something about this, simply because the NHS, I mean, it's on its knees.
Yes.
I mean, God knows how it's going to get through the winter. Add on, a pandemic's become endemic, an ageing population with often multiple chronic sicknesses, and then obesity with all the health problems that cuts. How are we as a society going to cope with that? But if you start arguing for positive measures on that, on the right they say, well, you're a nanny state and you've no right to do it.
Yes.
On parts of the left, not all of the left, but on parts of the left they say, oh, you're just fat-shaming and you can't talk about it. But getting people to not necessarily take up running, although most people can run and cycle, but just to walk rather than drive or get a bus, and all the good that does you and how much better you feel is becoming more and more essential.
Yeah, it would make a massive difference on so many levels. I think more people are starting to do it, but you're right, it's just like, I mean, the thing was with cycling's great, but it's all the gear, isn't it? And, you know, and swimming, it's a bit of a faff, isn't it? In terms of non-faff exercise, running is just, in terms of efficiency over time and stuff, is so much easier, isn't it? And obviously, let's face it, we're all going to end up walking. You're injured, I'm injured currently. My body is finding it increasingly difficult to run as far as I want it to. You know, we'll end up walking, and that's great. Go for a long walk. Walking's good fun as well, you know. But, you know, you don't get the sweat on. You don't quite get the rush of it, but it's still not to be frowned on. Just walk to work, you know.
Now, 26 miles is a hell of a long way. How far did you have to push your body in training? Because one thing that gets me, you can't just run if you want to be running. You start running, you think, hey, I'm running. Then people say, oh, well, Nick, no, you need to do sprints, repeat sprints of 400 metres, 800 metres, a kilometre. Go up and down hills very fast. Do some weights. Cycle as well. And you think, hold on a second, how are you meant to fit all this into your life?
Yes. I didn't do any other exercises. I didn't do any weights. I didn't do any cycling. I did the odd sort of track session of like 800 metres or whatever. But most of the training I did for the most important runs when you're training for marathon is the long runs. And so every week you'd run between, you know, start off at about 14 miles and then increase it by 2 miles a week till you're doing like three or four runs in the 20 to 22 mile bracket. Because then you're sort of, you're introducing your body to this wall thing, to this idea of when it runs out of natural fuel and it's all the glycogen leaves your legs, and it's, you're just taking tentative steps into that zone. You don't want to run 26 miles before you run a marathon. You want to leave that till the day, because it's a very, very long way and it's really hard work. And psychologically, you want to keep your powder dry for the race itself. But the long runs are the thing. That's for everyone at every level. It's just getting used to
it. What did your family think of you when you were doing all this?
They were okay, actually, because they were fairly used to it. And also because I'm a comic who sort of, my working week is normally Thursday, Friday, Saturday evenings, either in London or around the country, and then the odd gig during the week. So I could do my long runs on a Monday, you know, when everyone is at work or at school. So it wasn't as intrusive as it can be. When you've run 20 miles on a Sunday morning, you don't really want to do much else, do you?
You want to go to bed.
Yeah. Have a bath, watch telly, just chill out.
With your partner, who has a list of jobs to do, to keep the house and household going,
of course.
Is not always totally sympathetic to. And you say, but I've run 20 miles.
I know.
As if that gives you some kind of moral credence, as if having run 20 miles for no good reason at all, you're entitled to shut down the rest of the household.
That's something I wanted to deal with as well. I wanted to gently peel away the sort of heroic elements that are sort of projected onto these events. I think it's really good fun to run a marathon. I think it's very emotional. I think people get a lot out of it. It can be very painful and there's a lot of struggle involved, but I think it's important to remember that it's a struggle freely chosen and that it's ultimately, it can be quite a selfish endeavour. Of course, I would never want to denigrate anyone's journey into the marathon. You can get a lot out of it on an individual level, but maybe even just for myself, I just wanted to occasionally puncture the pretension around it. Ultimately, it's a laugh. Ultimately, it's really good fun. No one's asking you to do it. People can make themselves a victim of the experience. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, look at me. I'm running out. It's really hard. You've chosen it. It's a laugh. Everyone's cheering you. You get a good medal. And, you know.
Oh, you have chosen it. I mean, it's quite interesting about modern societies. Which are sedentary.
Yeah.
And we now have all these health problems that come from it. We have an excess of calories everywhere, excess of food.
Yes.
And all the problems that come with that.
Yeah.
How people are closing in the way to do what our ancestors would have regarded as insane. No one pre 20th century would have thought of doing this for fun because their lives were, they were getting more than enough exercise and more than enough pain.
Lives are hard enough, you know. I mean, in sort of mass marathon events are rare in Africa, for instance. You know, you've got the people there, the best runners run for money, and then everyone else is just walking a lot, not eating much anyway. It's almost a symptom of a very comfy society, isn't it, that we can do this. So I'm aware of that.
People also do it because they want something heroic in their lives. Yeah. And I have to say that the end of your book, when you finally make it, I was reading it about 2 a.m. yeah, and I sat up in bed and just cheered.
And don't get me wrong, it's really valuable about it. I think there can be both things at once. I think it can be both a heroic and quite an absurd act simultaneously. Like when you run marathons, I see it's like a private experience played out in public. You've got everyone cheering you, and what you're going through internally is quite private, and it's really valid. And I think it's great to create a heroic context for your life when it might not be necessary. Especially, you know, there I am in my late 40s, reasonably set up in my career. I'm not going to massively surprise anyone, but I'll always earn a living, for which I'm very grateful. And things are a little bit, you can think, it can be very easy to slip into some kind of complacency, isn't it? And it's nice to, let's face it, my wife and kids have forever dwindling respect for me. It's nice to create a construct where you feel heroic, but it's also quite, it's a little bit silly as well, and that's okay. It doesn't degrade how I felt or how inspiring it can be to hear of other people's experiences. I just didn't want to take it too seriously, you know. I just wanted to be aware of
that. Well, Paul, it's been great talking to you. C.L.R. James, the great Marxist historian, Caribbean Marxist historian, once says, "What know they of cricket that only cricket know?" And I think with your book, it's "What know they of running that's only running know?" It's not just about running.
Good.
It's about redemption. It's about confronting your past. And it's a wonderful book. And I do think that even if you are a really rubbish runner like me, and even if you are, you just go out and jog, you get so much out of reading it. And it's such a pleasure to read. Who publishes it, Paul?
It's Bloomsbury. It's out of Bloomsbury. The paperback's out recently, actually. So, yeah, it's a Bloomsbury production.
So you can buy it at all your favourite independent bookshops. Before I go, I must go into the commercial break for The Bunker, which is longer than anything on the shopping channel. So here goes. The Bunker comes out daily, Monday to Friday. There are other Bunker podcasts on everything you can imagine, the arts, the environment, books, We Never Sleep. If you've liked this show, could you please consider subscribing to our Patreon page? Because it does take money to produce journalism. I know the whole world is geared up to the idea that you can get journalism comes for free. It really doesn't. If you subscribe to Patreon, you get all kinds of goodies beyond the dreams of avarice. If you've liked it, could you give us a 5-star rating or a good review on Spotify or Apple or wherever you receive your podcasts? Or even if you've liked this particular podcast, you could email it to some friends. That would be good too. I think I'm done with all of those. All it remains to me to say is to thank Paul very much for joining us today.
It's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thank you.
And to thank you all for listening.
The Bunker Daily was presented by Nick Cohen. The producer was Andrew Harrison. The assistant producers were Jacob Archbold and Yelena Sofronievich. And audio production was by me, Alex Rees. Theme tune by Kenny Dickinson. The Bunker is a Podmasters production.